morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Now we have in the building, you might know him, he was the safety for Harvard.
Never knew that.
Learn something every day.
We know him as that.
Dr. Oz, ladies and gentlemen.
I did not know you played football, Dr. Oz.
Yeah, I did. I came up because we're talking about the Jets and Fitzpatrick, who played quarterback for Harvard a couple years after the, obviously. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons I went into medicine was because of football. Because I loved understanding how my body functioned. I realized that the different... Everyone would eat food at the place called the Harvard Union. Mm-hmm. It's where all the freshmen, when the freshman Harvard Yard folks would go. And I realized if I ate good food, food that's good for me, I'd play better. And if I ate the miserable stuff that I'd grown up eating oftentimes, I didn't perform so well.
Sluggish.
Sluggish is the word.
When did you diagnose yourself with CTE?
Not yet. It's coming up soon. When it happens, I won't know it's happening, though.
Gotcha. So.
Well, let's talk about the concussions in football since we're talking about them. Would you advise your children or your son to play football?
Or would you want them to?
My son is captain of his football team.
There you go. In high school.
Okay. But here's my thought. So I actually made a little snippet for the NFL. And I am acutely aware of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy and concussions. I had concussions when I was playing. All that said and done. What I got out of playing contact sports, because it's not just football, it's lacrosse and hockey. And my youngest daughter got a bad concussion playing basketball. She was captain of her basketball team in high school.
Lacrosse.
A lot of people play, and people whacking you with a stick.
Football,
you
can't. And ball is hard.
In football, you can only use your body. In lacrosse, you can use a stick to hurt the person. Mm-hmm. So, but I learned a lot about life playing contact sports, right. And I think there are lots of metaphors that you can extrapolate. And I think that if you're thoughtful about the injuries that might happen. And quickly get out of the game if you are having injuries. Some people have more than others. It helps. The other thing is professional football is a whole different level of head contact than high school football and high school sports.
Love head contact in high school.
So, right. Well, I don't think it's, we try to coach all across the country, make sure kids don't put their head first. Right. It still happens. I know it. But there's a lot more awareness to concussions than there was ever before. I've done shows on this. There's little concussion scales that parents can use for their kids so they can tell if their kids are having an issue and get them out. But there's a risk. It's still there. But at one point, do you draw the line? That's the real issue, right? Boxing was a line when I was a kid. I mean, I boxed as well. I wouldn't, that's a dangerous sport, I think, at many levels.
You boxed too, Dr. Oz?
Who would have known? It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. I just thought you was all brains.
The brains came because I stopped playing some of those sports later on.
Played women's basketball before you guys came in here.
That's so. Right. I played basketball with women. No, we were talking about Common, who's supporting your juice.
Water polo.
You played water polo too?
Sheesh. I played water polo too,
yeah. Goodness gracious.
That's all I did was play sports.
All American.
School got in the way.
Now, what is this thing that you brought us? We thank you for the gifts, but we see you brought us a gift.
I saw him posting this. I was excited to get it.
Yeah, this is the ResMed S Plus device. We have a partnership with them, and we're giving away $1 million. Of these devices on the show.
Really?
And the cool thing about them, I think they're a fantastic device for tracking how you sleep, but they don't just look at how you're moving. They actually watch you as you're sleeping. It allows you to figure out if you're breathing the right way. Do you have restless leg syndrome? Do you have, are you not falling asleep? Are you waking up too early? Are there sounds that are waking you up? Mm. What is the temperature of the room? What's going on in your bedroom in that atmosphere that's causing you to have problems sleeping? And the reason it's important to me is I want to gain 1 million nights of sleep data. I want to have a lot of people get these devices inexpensively or for free, hook them up and use them for you and your family, and let's figure out why we're not sleeping as a country. Because when we don't sleep, we pay a price with high blood pressure, number one cause of aging. We gain weight. We have problems with our memory. That's a lot worse, I bet, than hitting your head playing sports is not sleeping, causing Alzheimer's and loss of creativity. Mm-hmm. You also can't cope with life as well. Leads to depression. Your immune system gets weak, so you get the flu, but you also get cancer more often. So let's deal with the most underappreciated problem in America, which is sleep. So go to DrOz.com or SleepScore.com. Get some of these devices. Get them into your house. Use them. I'm getting the information, so I'll share the information back with everybody. So Charlamagne, for example, has got one of these devices.
I do. I'm trying to figure out how to hook it up.
I'm going to help you. Yeah. We're going to come to you. We do an intervention at your home. And I'm also going to hook up your DVR while I'm there.
Yes.
What temperature should you sleep? Because you said temperature. What's a good temperature that people should sleep?
That's 60, a great question.
68 degrees or less.
Oh, tell that to my wife.
Yeah, if you're fighting with your spouse over the temperature of the room, whoever wants it colder wins. And one other little trick, put socks on. Because if you're wearing socks, the coldness in the room won't bother you as much.
It keeps you warm.
It lets your core temperature get colder. Mm. You're going to hibernate at night. And subtle things keep you up. Like some people are unaware. They're woken up by...
Sweat wakes me up.
Yes.
Like if I sweat a lot, I have this one comforter that when I put it over me, for whatever reason, it makes me sweat. And I wake up sweating, and sweat will wake me up.
You know what? That's the TV on. People sleep with the TV on. I can't sleep with the TV
on. That's one of the worst habits we have.
I can't stand when people sleep with the TV on.
Checking, every night before you go to bed, we ask you a couple basic questions to help track you. So we want to know if caffeine keeps you up, if the TV keeps you up, are you looking at electronics late at night? Some people don't sleep unless they exercise, and which is I find for myself. If I do something physically active during the day, I can sleep so well at night.
Right.
If I just sit around all day long, I can't sleep. So once we figure out what's going on in your life, we can customize advice.
There's like what time you eat at night sometimes.
Another good example. You want to generally sleep 3 hours after you finish dinner, but some people get away with dinner and coffee at night. Others don't. So if you get away with it, why hassle you over it? But if you can't get away, some people can't have coffee even in the afternoon.
I'm glad we're doing this because one of my friends actually specifically asked me to ask you a question about sleep. Now, he said that he keeps on waking up in the middle of the night with anxiety, and he'll wake up like several times throughout the night and feeling like he can't breathe, and I don't know what's going on. He said, can you ask Dr. Oz, what is it that keeps waking me up like I'm anxious or I have like a problem?
Now, just a thug friend, has he ever killed somebody?
No.
That could be it.
Bad dreams.
So the tracking devices measure what kind of sleep you're getting. Is it REM sleep, deep sleep, or light sleep? You need to have all three. REM sleep is dream sleep, and oftentimes anxieties will play out during REM sleep. So the dreams you have, even if you don't remember them, will be pretty vivid. Now, you're paralyzed when you have REM sleep. Your body is unable to move. Mm. Otherwise, you'd act out your dreams. So if your friend is having nightmares or events that are revealing anxieties, there's probably dreams associated with them. Interpreting those dreams can be helpful.
Okay.
But you don't just wake up spontaneously without something that's not being resolved deep inside of you. Again, that's one of the benefits of sleep. You reboot the system. And if you don't do that right, it just builds itself up during the day.
So you're paralyzed during REM sleep? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't move.
Or otherwise, I should be jumping off buildings and
I thought that was the hag riding you. But how come, so when you pee in your sleep, that's not REM sleep?
No.
Like when you have the dream that you're peeing?
Yeah, no. But first of all, most people don't actually pee when they're dreaming that they're peeing. But there are some people who have that, and you don't need to be able to move to pee. That's an involuntary motion, like breathing, right? You mean you breathe even though you can't move. You can't voluntarily move. Mm-hmm. Your body is unable to act out what you're dreaming during REM sleep. Now, other types of sleep, you can. In normal light sleep and deep sleep, you can move around, but your body doesn't want to. It's trying to relax. It's trying to rest your brain.
What about when you're dreaming that you're having sex? Yeah. Exactly.
What about wet dreams?
You guys are on the same wavelength. I mean, they looked at each other. Love was in their eyes. And then I heard wet and REM. So again.
Wet REM.
Yeah, but it's one of those iconic human needs. And if you're not getting it, you're going to start dreaming about it. But it starts to get louder and louder until you eventually want to act out on it. But you talked about wet dreams are real. It's not, some people urinate in their dreams, other people,
it's a one off.
Exactly.
That's sad that you're giving a bunch of these away.
We're giving a bunch away, and sometimes these things can be expensive for people depending on their budget, so they're super discounted if they're not free. But they're out there, take advantage of them. Closest thing I can do to walking into your home and trying to help you get better sleep. But what I really need folks to do is use it on themselves, then share it with their friends. We want to just collect information on people. We want to understand what is it that's messing with it. I'll give you an example. Daylight savings time, right?
Yeah. Right.
So we looked at the data from these devices. The average American slept 31 more minutes with daylight savings. Now, what does that mean? Putting the clock back an hour, which basically gave you an extra hour in your day, helped you get 31 minutes of sleep. Mm-hmm. That's a huge payoff.
I felt way more awake today than I have in the past couple months.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Most Americans do. Now, when we spring forward, we lose the hour. We have more car accidents. People feel badly. They're not as creative. Mm. So it just reinforces that if you control your destiny, if you could carve out one extra hour a weekend, you'd feel the way you do now, all the time.
All right, we have more with Dr. Oz when we come back. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning. What up, y'all? It's DJ Envy.
Hey, I'm Angela Yee.
And I go by the name of Charlamagne Tha God, and we just want to say happy holidays from all three of us.
All three of y'all.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We have Dr. Oz in the building. Now, Dr. Oz, we're talking about sleep and getting better sleep.
What about having sex before you go to bed? How good is that for sleep?
For most people, it's good. Mm-hmm. But for some people, it's not. Again, you can track that as well.
Puts me right to sleep.
Yeah, but most men feel sleepy after sex. Most women feel energized by sex.
You gotta clean the house, make something to eat.
Exactly. So
that's because girls don't really orgasm. Like, so guys got off, but the girl didn't. So
you
got to
work harder, Charlamagne.
I need to finish. That's what happens usually.
That's your house.
Well, so when we look at longevity and sex, it's sort of cool. Women, it's not about numbers of time; it's about the quality of sex.
That's right. It.
And so, it is. You could play it out. You could role play,
or
but
you can play with it.
Play with.
and plus the cut.
By the way, he was on my show this week. We're talking about men's health.
I saw him playing with like two balls.
Yeah, he had
the two balls he was playing with.
Well, he was going to use his, and I didn't want him to, so I made him synthetic fake balls so he can demonstrate how he plays with his balls. But the reason we did it was because all week long we had this partnership with the Today Show. We were talking about Movember, men's health. Mm-hmm. We did this huge survey looking at what's going on with men. So, what are they admitting? What are they not admitting? So, most men don't want to touch themselves. They don't want to examine themselves, even though testicular cancer is, in young men, is the most one of the most common cancers. So, you're supposed to do it in a shower or in a tub when they're floating.
Is that when you cough?
No, coughs are hernia.
Okay.
We do it as part of the same exam, but you don't need to examine yourself for a hernia. That'd be uncomfortable. But your testicles, when you get into the shower, there's just... Feel them. See what's everything in there. If you feel like it's like a marble, they're supposed to feel like a walnut. Two walnuts, right? And one's, notice the left one's lower than the right one.
Uh-huh.
They're supposed to be off so they don't bang into each other. You know, the word avocado means testicle.
Really?
In Aztec, yeah.
I don't eat avocados.
Because avocados grow in pairs. One's lower than the other, and they don't bang into each other there, too. And they have that gritty feeling on the outside. Mm-hmm. So they feel like testicles. They're bigger than testicles, but they feel like testicles.
So next time I'm in a restaurant, I'm going to say, hold the testicles.
Hold testicles. Exactly.
What if you have, like, elephantiasis?
Elephantiasis is a problem with drainage of the lymphatic system, so your testicles swell up with fluid that can't drain back to the body. That's really uncomfortable and it's usually related to parasites in Africa and South America.
I've seen some pictures of that.
Is it possible to give yourself a prostate exam?
We can try. That's one of the other questions. I didn't get to this on the show with you. Please audit this for me.
You want to try something? Yeah,
yes. The average male thinks the prostate exam takes more than a minute. Now, to me, that's foreplay.
Yeah.
It takes like 10 seconds to do a prostate exam. I don't know what's going on.
Why should you do that?
So prostate exam should start by the time you're about 50. You're not going to find much out before then. And we used to do it earlier, but we don't find a lot of stuff till 50.
Okay.
And make sure that, if the guy's both hands on your shoulders, that's not good either. Right?
It's funny. I went to the doctor this weekend for my checkup.
No hands.
And I asked him. Yeah. Because I thought that you check early. He was like, no, you don't do it until you're 50 unless somebody in your family has a problem or prior or there's symptoms that you have.
Well, how can you tell? Like, what do you feel that something's
so
wrong?
The prostate has two little side rounded surfaces to it. So you're supposed to feel both of those rounded surfaces. You're not supposed to feel anything that feels like it's an acorn or a marble.
So if your doctor's doing it before the age of 50, he's looking for a good time.
No, doctors sometimes do it earlier than that if it's a family history. African Americans have a higher incidence, right? African Americans have a higher incidence of prostate cancer, so you might do it there. But listen, this is a real issue. The reason there's so much debate over this blood test, the PSA test, is that men don't realize that prostate cancer doesn't kill you usually. Mm-hmm. In our big survey we did, that was part of the survey that Charlamagne was part of, we asked over 1,000 men these questions. 80% of men think if you have prostate cancer and don't have surgery, you're going to die.
Right.
Not true. In fact, there was a big study showed that if you get surgery versus radiation versus just watching it, the survival rate of 10 years was the same. So it's dangerous, but you don't have to jump into it. Don't overreact whether you find something in a prostate exam or if you find a cancer from the blood test. You can't get too aggressive too quickly. Ben Stiller, the actor, talked about his prostate cancer this month. Mm-hmm. And, he went 18 months after his blood test before he did anything about it because he wanted to just watch and see if lifestyle would turn it around. Mm-hmm. And we're learning in cancer more and more, lifestyle makes a huge difference. Mm. Even sleep, by the way, makes a difference in how you cope with cancer. Sleep not only does it, I mentioned, cause the flu, but it literally does cause some cancers if you don't get enough of it because it weakens your immune system.
Why on American Pie did Stifler like getting prostate exams?
Because you have nerve endings back there.
So the G-spot, you know where the G-spot is, right?
Not in me.
Not in you.
Yes, it is.
There, you have a G-spot too. Women have a G-spot that's just behind you put your finger into the uterus and you sort of pull up towards yourself. The G-spot's there usually in women. In males, the G-spot's on the prostate. Mm. So men have a G-spot that can be stimulated through the rectum. It's just, that's not how men normally get excited, but it does happen sometimes.
Can I, examine my boyfriend if I'm like, listen, I'm concerned. Let me just check in there since you
encourage that. On the show, when I did your show, you were saying that you should have your partner do the exams on you.
Well, you said prostate. I said testicles, yes.
Oh, prostate.
I wouldn't examine his
prostate.
Yeah. Well, no, testicles, for sure you should examine him. In fact, you're probably a better detective than he is.
Mm-hmm.
But for a prostate exam, you really want to wear a glove and not have nails like yours.
Yes, okay. How would you have that conversation? I'm just curious.
I'd be like, I'm concerned about your health.
All right, bend over. All right, we got more with Dr. Oz when we come back. Keep it locked. It's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Good morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Dr. Oz is in the building.
Dr. Oz, I have to ask you this question. So I have this podcast called Lip Service, and we had a woman on the other day, and she says she has a really big clitoris.
And no, really big, Dr. Oz.
Now, like, this kind of
looks... A little penis.
She said it kind of looks like a little penis. I want to show you a picture of it, and tell me, is this something that should be a concern?
How do I, yes. That's... So
is that like on average?
No, that's significantly larger. You know, it's a really a miracle that we become males and females because it all we differentiate in our mother's womb because we're all born, we're created the same, and then we split. So sometimes these things get the process doesn't complete, and so you're left in the middle somewhere. We've done shows on that.
But she's in the they're in the middle.
They're in the middle more. But again, people have lots of problems coping with this because they're not seeing. They want to sort of be in one group or the other, and they can't. And probably 1% of the population is not clearly in one group or the other, and they hurt themselves because they feel badly about it. Which is, don't do that.
Works out well for her. I think she makes a lot of money.
It might be good for her in her career, and she's found her path in life. God bless her. But there are a lot of folks sitting at home right now listening who might feel that way about themselves, and it's dangerous. Hey, I'll give you a little test that's a little more easy to talk about. So hold your fingers in front of you like this. Hold your right finger. Now, is your index finger longer or shorter than your ring finger?
Which one is my index?
The first, second and the fourth.
Your ring finger.
This one.
Yes.
Mine is.
Yes, mine's longer than all my other fingers.
Your ring finger is the longest.
I don't know. What is mine?
And you
mine is almost the same.
The same. So for men, the ring finger is supposed to be longer.
Yeah.
For females... the index finger is supposed to be longer. But sometimes we flip. Sometimes, you know, we're just... Because we're exposed to hormones differently when we're in a mother's belly.
Am I a woman?
So what does this mean, Dr.
You're much more feminine.
What does this mean?
You're a classic male. Charlamagne's classic male.
Classic male, baby.
I've always heard you could tell how big a guy's penis is from his index finger.
I'm a feminine.
I don't think
I'm
that's
feminine.
True.
But you had Donald Trump think about on.
It. Yes, I did.
He's healthy. He's ready to go. He looked kind of unhealthy. I'm going to be honest with you.
According to his medical notes and the questions I asked him, he's healthy and you know he's good enough to run and be president.
He looked a little overweight, though.
Well, he admitted that. He said he's 15, 20 pounds overweight, but that's probably typical for a lot of Americans. I mean, I think, you know, weight's an issue that a lot of folks have to deal with as they go through life. The problem is when you're young and have weight, then it gets even more difficult when you get older, which is, again, going back to sleep again, things like sleep, dumb mistakes like that can cost you a lot because when you don't sleep, you crave carbohydrates.
Yeah,
and all, we also set up, you know, this whole month on the show, we're doing food hacks.
Right.
We got the best chefs in America coming on to talk about how you can make your meals in 15 minutes or less and save money. But we're also going to walk you through some of the big food stores. How can you get the healthy food, even in fast food places, and not put weight on? Because it's a big crisis. And most of the weight we'll gain this time of year. Next 2 months, almost all the weight gain for the whole year. Wow. So if you don't gain weight over the holidays, you don't have to go on a diet in January because you're going to weigh the same as you did before the holidays.
I saw you did this whole, you're doing this also 3-day reset.
Yeah.
For people. So I was taking a look at that as well.
I love that.
I do that all the time.
In 3 days, you can reset the gut bacteria because when our bacteria in our gut do most of our digestion. We outsource digestion. And so if we can get the bacteria to behave themselves, they'll work better for us. So if you eat the right kinds of foods, things like alliums. You know what alliums are?
Mm-mm.
You know, leeks and onions and garlics. These are foods that go into our gut and feed the good bacteria. Within 3 days, you can reset that system. So if you go to my, I have an app. Go on my app. You'll find the 3-day reset challenge there. All of our recipe plans are there. And lots of great advice. Download the app. Take advantage of it. Be part of the community. But most importantly, hack your food. So you naturally are going to lose weight without working hard at it. Nothing's healthier than laughing and having a good time with your family over a meal.
Mm-hmm.
But don't do dumb things before Christmas, which is what most of us do. We get tired.
Mm-hmm.
We start having to go to a lot of office parties, drink too much at those parties. Without that, you know, we have a hedonistic drive to eat that's unleashed by the extra alcohol in our blood. Right. So I always tell people, always have a glass of water between each drink. It'll keep the hangover down, but also, you know,
stop you from drinking. Stop as much.
Exactly. And fight for your sleep over the holidays.
Because
when you're, again, if you're not sleeping enough, you're going to gain weight naturally. You have more time to eat and you'll eat the wrong things.
Okay. There you have it.
Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz, it's The Breakfast Club. Good morning.
The Breakfast Club.
That was Tory Lanez with Love. Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building. Goes by the name of Baron Davis.
What's up, sir?
Welcome back.
Man. Thanks for having me.
Baron out here in these streets cashing in on the holiday ugly Christmas sweater phenomenon.
Well, I think it's more than that, though, for Black Santa.
Yeah, you know, it's for us, it's like a cultural movement.
Okay.
you know, the understanding that, you know, my grandmother, aunts, old aunts, they mm-hmm. always collected black Santas. And so the thought was, like, yo, there's nothing to represent us, you know, and no character, really no characters when you look at it that mm-hmm. exude positivity or speak like us, walk like us, that our kids can learn and grow from. So that was really like the basis. I wanted, you know, being a filmmaker and things like that, I was like, man, I need to, you know, figure out something that...
Some people are devastated by the idea that Santa could be black. And we saw that with the Mall of America when they had that black Santa and people got
so... Oh, yeah, they
so,
were mad. Nobody would take a picture with that Santa.
Wait till
people
they find
like,
out
Santa
about black
Claus
Jesus.
Is not black. No, but were you shocked that people really were protesting?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's just a sign of ignorance. You know, people want to be divisive, and there's still a big majority of this country that, you know, just live off conflict and breathe from conflict.
Now you're from Cali, right?
Yeah.
You have a 2-year-old son, right?
Oh, yes.
Now, what do you tell him about Santa?
I mean, when you see the image, he like, man, that's Santa. You know? Like, but he, you know, his mom is half white, half Brazilian, so he go take pictures with.
Oh,
the
you
white
one
Santa.
Of those?
Oh, man. Stop it. You're
lucky you out the league. You take a picture with a white woman nowadays, boy. Woo!
Charlamagne knows.
Jersey sales drop.
You ain't lying. You ain't lying.
So you believe in the magic of Christmas and Santa? Because Charlamagne said he, you know, he tells his daughter that. He's Santa.
Well, I grew up Jehovah's Witness, so
okay.
I never celebrated it. But my wife do, so you yeah. know,
and she's black,
so right. you know.
Why you got Santa? She's black.
I just feel like everybody needs to have, you know, some type of positivity, especially mm-hmm. around this season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a lot going on and a lot that has been going on, and we just need some positive vibes, some good energy, and, you know, knowing what's coming and, you know, these next 4 years, I think it's an opportunity for people to actually come together, you know.
My favorite Christmas song was Santa Claus is a Black Man. You know that song?
Not yeah. Jingle Bells, not none of that.
Santa Claus is a black man. Okay. It's a little, got a little nice funky beat to it, too.
Now you from Cali, so if you're from Cali, can you really rep Santa? Because he wears all red. If you a Crip. No, seriously, if you a Crip, do Crips rep Santa Claus?
They rep the blue suits.
That's what I think. I'm serious. Nah. Now, well, we need to do something called Santa Blaws.
Okay.
Triple OG blood Santa Claus. That's what we're going to do next year for the ugly Christmas
weather. I don't know about that.
What's wrong with you, man?
Santa Blaws will pop. You know how many bloods would buy that?
Man, they got
Merry
Saint
Christmas.
Brick.
No.
Saint Brick is a blood.
No.
See? You late with it, Charlamagne.
That's enough, man. We can't have too many gangbanging Santas out there, man.
So what happens when Christmas is over with Black Santa?
So for us, we go into Martin Luther King holiday with just a campaign, just affirmation, king, queen, dream. Just calling each other's kings and queens mm-hmm. and telling little kids to dream. So, you know, just kind of like a mentorship program or a campaign where anybody who does anything successful, you just telling, you shouting out kids and telling them to dream, you can be anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one to open up their minds and opportunities to jobs that's out there mm-hmm. that they don't see. They only see the glitz and the glamour. But, you know, if we can get everybody shouting out that message and then like T-shirts, hats with Black Santa, wearing a hat that say queen to honor women and all the women in his life. So, you know, we want to do things to just continue to be thoughtful, bring people together. We got a coloring book coming in mm-hmm. February for African-American History Month, which will honor a lot of the, you know, past and also present legends that, you know, people don't really get an opportunity to hear their story. You know, it's almost like every African-American History Month, you know, it's the same stories. And then I was like, all right, come on now, we out, you know, and for us, I think that it's a deeper dive into the culture, and that's basically why I created this company. It's like a treasure chest for African-American wealth and knowledge.
Were you offended by referring to LeBron James' team as posse, how some people were? I know Jay-Z just gave him Sports Illustrated Man of the Year award, and he referenced posse also. Do you think that was offensive?
Yeah, for sure it's offensive. You know, these kids came, you know, they came in people looking at them like a posse, mm-hmm. you know, and from what they did, you know, they grinded, they stay focused, and now they on at the top of their game. So, yeah, you come in as a posse, but you graduate to executive businessman. And, you know, I just shot them out because they proved everybody wrong. They did it together, and I just don't think it's right to classify them as that when, you know, you got agents and people like that who are, you know, kind of shucking and jiving and juicing these players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get the utmost respect. So I don't think it's fair.
You can have a posse of executive businessmen, though.
Yeah, you can't.
Like, nobody ever says that.
But though, I think Phil really was stuck in the 90s and just trying to sound cool.
Yeah.
And you see a group of black men, you want to sound cool. Like, oh, him and his posse.
Yeah, and, but also you got to think that Phil is like the master manipulator and, you know, he's great at creating media attention to, you know, distract players and games. And, mm-hmm. you know, obviously it ain't going to work with LeBron James. But, you know, he's done that to Shaq. He's done that to Kobe, call him out and you know, just to kind of stir some media up.
What's the best team in the NBA now?
The best team in the NBA to me is the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Over the Warriors?
Yeah. Well, the Warriors is playing the best basketball and the most exciting basketball, but the Cavs are still the champs.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't really see that last year with
you
the Warriors.
You played for both squads,
yeah,
too.
I played for both franchises. But
who got the best pussy in the cities? Cleveland. I feel like the girls in Cleveland do more because they... Not nothing to do there.
Shut up, man.
Stop disrespecting Cleveland.
That was a bad time for me in Cleveland, man. It was cold.
It was cold.
You just stayed home.
I just stayed in my apartment.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got Baron Davis in the building, former NBA player. Now, Yee?
Are you still trying to work to get back in the NBA?
Yeah, I've still been, you know, dimming and dabbing. I think the hard part is staying focused on mm-hmm. just that, you know, because mm-hmm. basketball is like a full-time gig. So, you know.
What you mean, getting back into play? You going to play? No, yeah, you're talking about coaching.
You've been playing in the D League, though.
I played in the D League last year.
You want to play ball? You want to get back in the league?
I mean, part of me for sure, because I left at 32. And
you feel like you left something on the table.
I feel unfinished business. Yeah, I thought my career was over when I got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then I never thought that I'd be able to, like, walk and run and play again. And now I'm like, damn, dude, I can do it. I might as well try. But I've been trying, man, and it's taking a long time.
How you been doing in the D-League?
I did all right in the D-League. I think I went the last 2 weeks of the season last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do it this year. I'm just going to work out and mm-hmm. try and work out for some teams. I wish I would have did that last year.
Isn't it crazy, though? Because it feels like it probably never leaves your system. Like, I mean, you've been doing it your whole life, yeah. Literally. Kid, high school, middle school, college. Like, will you ever feel like, okay, I'm retired now. I don't want to play no more ball.
Never.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's and to be honest, since I haven't been playing the last 4 years, it's been the worst thing in your life because you struggle with not just, like, oh, I can't play, but it's just like the camaraderie, the mm-hmm. what do I do every day, the you know, the mm-hmm. attention, the, you know, the routine, and, you know, you're just sitting there like, damn, dude, I have nothing that's out there that's motivating me. You know, I don't have nobody really to connect to. All the dudes that I play with, they are, like, in their life, living their NBA life.
Yeah.
It's
like, look at this before, like, there go Baron again, want to hang.
Right. You show up all happy. They like, yeah, we know you ain't happy, fool.
How hard is it to go from the NBA to the D-League? I'm sure you get treated, like, not as, you know,
yeah,
great
yeah.
as... No, I'm saying because, like, it's not the same treatment.
It's definitely not the same treatment.
Like, what's it like?
For me, it was a rude awakening, and it was a great humbling experience for me because I'm... You know, it was like, if I'm going to start, I want to start from the bottom. So mm-hmm. I wanted to start in the D-League and, you know, feel that grind and what it felt like to just wake up every morning to practice with the young dudes and, like, you know, develop. But, you know, you stand in a quality inn with a roommate, you know, it's like...
quality inn.
It's like, yo... You know, I was like, I got a roommate. They're like, yeah, man, you got a roommate. I'm like,
you have to. You can't get your own room. Like, I'm going to go
down.
That's
what I said. I said, how much is the room? They was like, well, if we give you the discount, it's like $59. I said, man, I take four rooms. You know what I mean? Like,
you still sitting on some Adams, B, right?
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. It's like, you know, you flying on propeller planes, sitting in the back. You getting up at 4 o'clock, got to get to the airport. You checking your own bags in. Not saying, like, people don't do that for a living, but in the NBA, right. You know, you never have to fly private.
Mm-hmm.
People take care of you, get food on a plane. You never have to worry about that. But in the D-League, it's like...
It's none of that.
No, it's none of
no
that.
No first class.
No class. No nothing class.
So the philanthropy doesn't, like, fill a void? Like, the whole, you know, Black Santa and stuff like that? Like,
yeah, Black Santa is kind of starting to be my basketball because it's giving me opportunity to, like, build a team around me. And then it's also giving me the feeling that you get when you give. So, you know, a lot of athletes, y'all yourselves, y'all do a lot of giving. So that's that's kind of like an emotional hit for you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's still like you have, for me, it's like finding the creative, creating the stories, creating characters, things like that. That has become like a place where I know I can go to every day and have discipline and routine. But, you know, it took me a while to really like dive into that. So I know why athletes like go depressed and things like that.
And having your family, too. I'm sure it's nice to be there for your son.
Yeah. And, you know, I never had kids when I played in the NBA, right. So I didn't have kids till after the NBA. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, you had kids after?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you was definitely bored.
It's working. I got, you know, but I got two boys, and it kind of just opened my eyes to all the stuff that I'm seeing now, especially, like, you know, what am I going to teach him? Like, I ain't have a daddy. Like, what do I say to him? You know, yeah, things like that. So it's just, like, just trying to find different ways right. And, you know, watching other people, you know, parent. Is for me an opportunity to just, you know, that's why I start this company, to be able to speak to my kids and draw that connection between father, son, mother, daughter, father, mother.
You know, I respect you too, because when you had the Jerry Curl, right?
Yeah.
You was like one of those first internet sensations that got slandered ridiculously. But you held on to that curl till you was ready to get rid of it.
Yeah, it was the essence, you know? It was the essence.
Yeah, you didn't let nobody force you out that curl.
Was there a statement behind that?
I was in the moment. You know, I was just, I told all my homeboys, I said, yo, I don't know if I can ever grow hair again, but if I do, I gotta grow a Jerry Curl. Mm-hmm. And so that the Jerry Curl became my motivation for like working out, mm-hmm. getting back on the court. I was like, yo, if I can have a Jerry Curl and make it back to the
NBA,
I can do anything in life. That's the ultimate comeback. You know what I mean? Out there with the curl dripping on the court, that was just
the new AC Green.
Yeah, and then the curl start drying
smell,
up
though?
And start itching. Huh?
Yeah, because remember, Jerry Curls is distinct.
I smell good. What you talking
about? No, they don't.
No.
When you getting the curl done,
oh, man, that used to stink.
It don't smell too great, but when you throw the activator in, it's...
Hell no. My cousin's ex-wife used to me when I was eight, right? And I used to like it, you know what I'm saying? But when she I got a Jerry Curl, I made her stop because I didn't like the smell. I'm dead ass serious. It was the smell of her Jerry Curl that made me say enough is enough.
Now, in 99, this guy's a jerk. In 99, when you got drafted, the league was a lot tougher.
Yeah.
You know, now it seems like it's a very easy league. They call a lot of quick fouls.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem as tough as it is. What do you think about the league now?
I just think it evolved. You know, one, they out to protect the players and the longevity of, mm-hmm. you know, guys getting injured. So the game has become a lot softer. You know, the style is different. You know, the way teams are coaching, the way coaches are coaching, is to me, it's a very copycat league. Mm-hmm. So you'll see a lot of, you know, trends. Like right now, everybody playing small ball. Eventually, somebody's going to have two dominant big men, and then the game is going to slow down, and then everybody will follow that coach. But, you know, it's definitely got a little softer, but it's more exciting. You know, I think it's more exciting for the fans, and, you know, I think that's what the game needed.
That's what makes you feel like you can come back because it's not as physical?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go out there and finesse a couple years?
Yeah. I mean, I played my whole career either injured or, you know, just trying to do everything I could for the team, and, you know, it just wore your body down. And now, you know, it's just really like pickup, playing up and down, shooting threes, going to the halls. Like, damn, you know, I was born like 5 years too early, you know?
What was your favorite team you played for?
I would say... Charlotte, mm-hmm. and
Fun
Golden
City.
State. Golden State, yeah. Mm-hmm. Charlotte was incredible because it was, you know, I was young, I was a rookie, and it was all about hoop. And I had a bunch of funny dudes on my team. Mm-hmm. Like I was the youngest guy. Everyone on my team was like married, had kids. So, you know, it was a great experience. And then Golden State, of course, the year we believe was probably like one of my favorite years because just the team and the bond and the brotherhood was like incredible.
Mm-hmm. Now you are a guard.
Yes.
You think you could stick Russell Westbrook or Curry,
hey,
or Russell, Irvin?
I've been telling people this, but Russell Westbrook dunked on me this summer, right? Mm-hmm. And then that was like the moment where I was like, you know what, dude? I probably can't play in the NBA now. Like,
Russell Westbrook different, though.
Yeah.
You can't compare yourself to Westbrook. Westbrook different.
I never been dunked on like that. He made me feel like a kid.
Not fair,
man.
Me
feel like a kid.
How old are you now, 36?
36.
36, coming off a lot of injuries. Russell,
man,
in the prime. Like, yeah, that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah, but he barely hit me and sent me flying and dunked on me. And it was just like, yo, did he really do that? Like, did I really just got, you know, big boy like that?
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club.
We popping bottles.
We got a special guest in the building who left Angela Yee a nice little love letter the other day.
You shooting your shot, bro?
He was just saying something nice, something that y'all men need to learn from.
Something cool,
yeah. He was like, hey, babe, you look beautiful.
He just made
Can
up
you
a
wear
home.
What you wore the other night? Come see you. Your boo, your bae, Tory
Lanez. It was like, yo, you a sexy. I want you to know that. It was something along those lines.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Mine was
I mean,
good.
You wake
That's
up
so
in
nice.
The morning, you stuck it to a computer.
What you mean mine was better? No. He left you a note too? What you talking about? What the hell are you talking about? Yours is better.
And I got him a gift. You know, because it's new
Damn,
album.
Damn, Tori, you don't plan to share?
I was. Nobody wanted to take a shot. I was like, y'all gonna take a shot with me. Everybody stays silent except Angela. She was the only one that was ready to party.
I said, yeah.
Go get cups.
I'm waiting on the cups. You was just taking
Okay, he needs it now.
Well, congrats on I told you.
Thank you so much.
Now, I was calling you Drake like, you know, for a minute.
And you were calling him Tori Taylor.
He's calling you everything. Bryson.
No. I still don't know the difference sometimes. But the album is good, but it sounds like you ain't developed your own sound yet, bro.
Damn, you feel that way.
Like, you sound like Trey sometimes. You sound like Fetty Wap on some records. Like, what do you think that is?
Who else?
Probably just Fetty. Fetty, Trey, and Lil Drake.
Well, I think there was one song that people were saying that sounds reminiscent of Fetty Wap.
Okay.
But I don't know about the whole album.
And the Cold Hard Love, I like it. It sounds like Trey, though.
Okay.
No, That's but cool. The album has gotten a really great reception, and I know I was jamming to it as well. So
thank you so much, and thank you to everybody who purchased the album, whether or not it was like, you know, hard copy or online or
streaming.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thankful to be at this point of my life and my career. I've always wanted to drop an album, so the fact that anybody has anything to say about it is just makes me happy, you know.
And you have three songs that are pretty big from off the album already, which a lot of artists will never see.
You know, too successful. Or at least I would like to say the second one is, you know, on its way to, you know, success. I like to say I have two successful singles right now that I personally am proud of. And, you know, I'm just happy, that, like you said, that they came from the album and that, you know, this pushes the album and things of that nature.
You always been a fan of 90s music?
Of course.
Because you say it and then everybody falls in love sometimes?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Everything.
And that's that Toronto influence, too.
For sure.
Like,
that West Indian, that Bayesian. He's half Bayesian.
You know, we go to the, because, like, you know, we grew up in, like, the culture of going to the basement jam. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? All the parties.
You
was
in Toronto as well?
Why? We like the, well, I don't know how it was out there.
Brooklyn and Queens.
Yeah, we felt like the home of that. Like, you know, because like that's
Indians.
Where, yeah, like that's how it always went in the north. It's like you always had a basement in your house or something like that. And that's where all the parties would be inside the house. So, definitely.
That's why Toronto artists do so much patois.
You moved around a lot. You were in Texas. You were in a lot of different places in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, definitely. But I was in Texas like a little bit later. Like I'm talking about, when I was, like, in high school and stuff like that, that's when we were going to the gyms and, like, you know.
Because my wife heard the Love joint, the Controller joint, and she was like, that's West Indian. He was like, he could pull that off without being true West Indian. He's like, she's Jamaican. He was like, he has to be true West Indian.
Because it's hard for somebody that's not West Indian to try to do that patois. It never sounds
Definitely.
Right.
Nah, I'm actually Bayesian. I'm just Jamaican by association.
Envy's Bayesian, too.
Like, you know,
he's
really?
Beige. He's just Bayesian.
Oh, like, for real? Nah, I'm Bayesian. Like, my dad is Bayesian, and my mom is technically from Guyana, but she's from a Dutch country, so I'm Dutch. Carousel is where she's from. Okay. Carousel, whatever.
Now how did Say It blow? Because, you know, Say It was a record that caught fast nationally. It seemed like there was a lot of money behind it, because before we knew your name and before we knew your face, the record came in.
The thing about that record was that was just the first time that I finally had got a push from a major standpoint. Like, I was putting out records like this from time. I want to say, like, if you go back into old records, like, you go back to records like TLC that I had on the Chicks Tape 2, it's the same effect. You know what I mean? It's just like the records just kind of went over people's heads because nobody knew me.
But did that bother you? Because they knew your record, but not your face or your name.
Envy keeps saying nobody knows what you look like.
No, he's... But no. But honestly, up to...
They know his record's bigger than his face.
Well, see, now it's a little different. I guess because... No.
It's the truth.
He's not lying, though, because before this moment, now, it was exactly like that. Now it's like I go anyway. If you're black, you just know me. Like, or if you're like some type of somebody who looks like you listen to hip hop or music or some sort, you know me randomly. But it's like beforehand, it was that exact problem. Mm-hmm. But I think my problem was I never shot videos for the right songs, or I never was consistent with my visual base because I'm such a picky guy. I take more into the pride of it. So I can't just do videos like this and post and stand in the corner because that's just not my way. Mm-hmm. You know, I care more. So I think that was the problem back then. But now, you know, I'm on my, I don't know, the girls think I'm pretty.
All right, we got more with Tory Lanez when we come back. We'll also find out why he did Drake's Controller record over. Good morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee. Charlamagne Tha God, we are The Breakfast Club. Tory Lanez is in the building. What made you do Drake's Controller over?
I like the song.
Were you surprised? Were you surprised at the feedback of Controller? Because it caught. Honestly, like it's one of the biggest records in the club.
Some people said they like it better than the original version.
Oh wow, that's great, man. Nah, man. For me personally, like, you know, we treat the beats like it's like a yard thing. Like you treat the beats like rhythms. Like, you know, you hop on them and you do your thing.
But I know at one point you wasn't trying to talk.
I hopped
about
on. I got the keys that day too, I bodied that too. But it's just, I guess people just reacted to the.
But I mean, because I remember you said you didn't want to talk about Drake because you wanted to separate.
I mean,
yourself.
I just feel like the media kind of makes it such a thing to the point where it's like they just want me to feed into it at every point, and it's just not what it is, you know.
You kind of do it on your own though.
I mean, I feel you.
You did have a video with Philly
when you was in Philly. We really out here in Philly, real Toronto. We get out here in Philly, not them other guys. You know what I'm saying? Y'all niggas know what the f*** it is. We really be out here. You heard? I'm like you. I'm good in Philly. And
nice try, buddy. Okay?
You did that.
Nice try.
We seen it.
You did it.
No, but I know what we're doing here. We're trying to sleek into this subject. We're not going to do that. We're here to talk about the I Told You that's out now.
You would never bring it up if you didn't do stuff like that.
And I feel you, but I Told You is out now.
You have a lot of artist support, too, on your side, too. I saw a lot of artists, you know, promoting the album. Like I saw Rick Ross, Meek Mill. I saw Pusha T. A lot of other artists. Are these people that you have personal relationships, friendships with, or is it just...
Honestly, yeah. I mean, no. Honestly, I try to send music to everybody. I make hooks and stuff, and I write, you know.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, people have heard about me either through those weird ways or we've met each other in person and it's always been love. I'm just happy for anybody who did, you know, post the album and, you know, especially all the MMG guys.
they
all just did it.
There was a reason why they did that one.
I don't think so. I mean, Wale, I know personally, toured with him beforehand, and he saw me before all this. Meek has just been my man from a long time. I've been making music with Meek since the Swavey mixtape, which was like 7 mixtapes ago. And Ross, I just met him randomly, and I think the reason why he may have posted my album was because randomly, like, the first time I really actually met him, we was in Miami. I don't know how. I randomly had the album in the car that I was just in, so I was randomly listening to it. And when he walked out of Studio 23, boom, and then someone was like, yo, this is Tory, this is Ross, and we met each other, and he was like, yo, anything you need, I got you. But I think it was off the love of you had mine, and I'll support yours, you know? I don't think it was a calculation or something like that.
Let's talk about your goon days, because I'm listening to the album. You used to be gooning. You broke into somebody's house?
I mean, I don't want to sit here and talk about exact in details, but...
You did on the album.
yeah, but see, that's the thing. That's why you should cop the album, because the album has, you know, stories that I wouldn't necessarily come in an interview and just talk about, because these are not things to gloat about. You know,
but
whole...
You changed.
Of course. And that's the
change
whole...
On the album.
And that's the whole point of the album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is to show people from where we came. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people have... And I think this about, like, you know, even a lot of my other interviews, a lot of people have this misconception about Canada and about Toronto. Like, it's like,
what you mean misconception?
Nah, because people,
I love Toronto,
and I do too, you know what I mean? But I think people have a misconception of how rough it is out there for us when we grow up, and the things and the politics that we still deal with that people don't think we deal with, you know. But I'm not here to, you know, greasy up Canada. Nah, it's not what I'm here to do. But I am here to tell the real stories and to talk the stories that we go through as young men in Canada, you know.
Most men I know love Toronto.
Especially because of the women.
Yeah,
the women are so
beautiful. That's because they're going downtown. They're having a great time. They're going downtown partying at nice clubs and doing great things. But when we're growing up, we're not doing that.
Right.
Like, we're not in any of those clubs, and we're definitely not downtown in the inner city. That's just not what we're doing. Like, you know what I mean? You're in your own neighborhood, and you're pushed back, and you're in, you know what I mean? And you go through what you go through. And the city's so small that there's just no escaping anything. So at this point, it's like all the young kids, I'm who they look up to. You know, I'm the person that they look up to, say to, yo, I seen him. I was out there and saw him.
I remember when, like, he didn't have that ring, that watch, that bracelet, chains.
You know, but for real, yeah. People feel like that. Like, I remember when he was sleeping on my couch.
And that other bracelet.
How many couches you slept on, Tori?
A lot of couches. Jesus Christ. A lot of couches, man. A lot of back seats. Mm-hmm. A lot of, like, yo, nah, real talk. Like, mm-hmm. like I lived in a lot of cars, and I slept on a lot of couches, bro. I was at a lot of people's houses, and I told a lot of people to believe in this, and you know, a lot of people didn't believe in it. A lot of people just looked at me and was like, I can't foresee this thing that you see, you know, and that's why we're here at this point. And I told you it's out, and that's what that I told you is for. It's for all the doubters, the naysayers.
Do you guys get along? Do you Toronto artists get along?
I get along with everybody. I don't actually, like, that's the thing. People think I have a...
You got to stop drinking Henny and going to do videos in Philly telling people they can't come there, but then coming to the Breakfast Club and saying you get along with everybody.
Nice try, buddy.
I was talking about every artist, whether it's Justin Bieber, whether it's Belly, whether it's whoever it may be. Weekend.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I get along with everybody. I don't have a problem with anybody in Toronto. Mm-hmm. If somebody has a problem with me, that's different. But for me, I personally don't have beef with me. If you're going to know when I have beef with somebody, because one of us is just falling out. Mm-hmm. The crew's, you're going to start seeing people missing from either my crew or his crew. Mm-hmm. That's just, you're going to know when I have a beef with somebody. I don't have a beef with nobody, you know?
Why do you want to make people disappear?
He said he doesn't.
That's not what I said.
Why?
I'm just saying, that's just how it is. Like, if it was beef, we would
Toronto
be...
Toronto feels like how New York used to be, where nobody got along and everybody did their own
thing. Don't get me
wrong.
Everybody does do their own thing, but that's why I'm saying, like, if it was beef, you know when it's beef, because then we just start playing scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to play scoreboard. Who wants to do that?
Mm-hmm. We want to get money.
We want to get money. We came out here to get money and be young. You know what I'm saying? Live our life. That's all.
All right, there you have it.
I was born a donkey.
It's the donkey of the day.
That's pretty funny.
Charlamagne the devil?
Possibly. The Breakfast Club.
Yes, donkey today goes to NFL player Alden Smith. Now, Alden Smith is a troubled young man who is currently suspended from the NFL for numerous transgressions. I mean, trouble seems to follow Alden Smith, whether it's ranging from drunk driving to being stabbed at his own house party and sued by a man who claimed to be shot at the same party. He was arrested for another DUI, booked for marijuana. He took a leave of absence and went to rehab. He's been charged with 3 felony counts of illegal possession of an assault weapon. After his second DUI in 20 months, he admitted himself into rehab again. He got arrested at LAX for making comments to a TSA agent implicating that he had a bomb. Then he got suspended 9 games. Then he was arrested again for an alleged hit and run, DUI, and vandalism. And currently, he is suspended by the NFL for 1 calendar year for violating his substance abuse policy. Now, when you're suspended from the league, you can't participate in any illegal activity, which seems to be a hard thing for Alden Smith to not do. Okay, when you are suspended from the league for violating the substance abuse policy, the last thing you should be doing is abusing substances. Now, Alden Smith is 26 years old, so he's a new nigga. And you know, they move a little different than us 80s babies. And I've gotten to the point in my life where I don't chastise kids for what they don't know, because they're kids. You're not stupid because you don't know, you know, because you don't know things. You're stupid for what you aren't willing to learn. And Alden Smith is stupid. Okay, because he seems like he refuses to learn. Now, his latest incident is in the running for Donkey of the Year. Like, this is a high-level hee-haw status. It's an alleged Periscope video floating around that belongs to Alden Smith, which shows a man and a woman off-camera engaged in and discussing a fire-up session. Fire obsession is them smoking a blunt. Now, I'm not the highest grade of weed in the dispensary, no pun intended. I tell y'all this all the time, but I think that if I'm suspended from the league for substance abuse, the last thing I should be doing is abusing substances, especially abusing substances on social media. When will you all realize that the things you do online will affect your dumbass offline? Okay, contrary to your popular belief, when you are on Periscope, Facebook Live, and Snapchat, whatever you're using to record yourself, when you are on these platforms, we can see you, okay? We can hear you. You're not hiding. But this story gets better. I know what you're saying, Charlamagne. How could this be in the running for Donkey of the Year? He smoked a blunt on Periscope. People smoke blunts on Periscope all the time, B. Well, being suspended from the league, Alden Smith, he's saying it's not him. He actually tweeted out, good try, not me. Well, let's listen to this video because we have the audio, Mr. Not Me.
This is what you call a fire up session.
You shouldn't even be posting that.
Do you see my face?
No, but what is it?
They don't have my name. This is just a fire up session.
So if you just put it on there, it's just doing it? It's live? Oh, that's hella stupid.
Shut up. You hella stupid. You trying to smoke, fam? They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Excuse me, say
whoa.
What? Come again? We didn't hear you the first time.
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Oh, it's not like you put what? What?
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
It's not like I put Alden Smith. Okay, so Alden Smith, who posts from this Periscope account all the time, who has other videos up on this account, is on this account smoking a blunt, says it's not him on Twitter, but says it's not like it's him on the video. Let me hear that one more time.
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Okay, all right. Okay, I don't care how good a pass rusher Alden Smith is. He doesn't deserve the privilege of playing in the NFL no time soon. He's about to be 27. I don't know when maturity will kick in for this young man, but he shouldn't be allowed back in the league until he can prove that it has. You are not doing Alden Smith or the world any favors by continuing to pay him. I tell y'all all the time, money doesn't change you. It just multiplies whatever you are. Okay, and Alden Smith needs no assistance when it comes to being a donkey. In fact, a donkey with dollars just feels untouchable and invincible, so he will continue to do donkey things. So you have to suspend him indefinitely from the league, let his money dry up, let him humble himself, and let him hit rock bottom, and then we can discuss him playing in the league. Alden Smith has taken for granted an opportunity that millions of kids across the country wish they had, and if he loses it all, I don't feel sorry for him one bit, and neither should you. And if you do, let's listen to this Periscope video one more time, please. The whole thing, please. Just one more time.
Oh, boy.
This is what you call a fire up session.
You shouldn't even be posting that.
Do you see my face?
No, but what is it?
They don't have my name. This is just a fire up session.
So oh, boy. Just put it on there. It's just doing it. It's live. Oh, that's hella stupid.
Mm-mm. Shut up. You hella stupid. You trying to smoke, fam? They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Oh, okay. So it's not him.
Oh, my goodness.
Please give Alden Smith the biggest hee haw.
He don't know no better.
He must have been high.
Wow. He don't know no better.
Nah, all right. Nah, that's like. And then the fact that somebody on the video told him you shouldn't be doing this on video. Told him he's hella stupid, and then, you know, you hella stupid. Like, wow.
Oh my goodness. All right.
That's heartbreaking. That's
well, we don't know that it's him. It's not like he said Alden Smith.
Come on, ye.
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
The Breakfast Club.
In my hand, one more time for
good morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest, and this is the only guest in Breakfast Club history that has ever smoked up here.
And you're not going to tell Snoop Dogg no.
No,
when
no.
He's like,
we sure didn't.
Did we get in trouble for that?
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, Snoop Dogg!
Hey! we just had a healthy debate with Drama. Is Snoop the most famous rapper in the world? I said yes.
Globally. He said no matter where you go in this world, no matter who it is, race, age,
everybody knows Snoop Dogg.
I said it was between you and Hov.
He said you are the biggest brand.
Mm. I don't know. It's like an out-of-body experience for me. It's hard for me to say because I live with me every day. So I don't know who the biggest rapper is globally, but I do know that when I do go certain places, like, it's hard to try to, like, camouflage, disguise, mm-hmm. whatever. Even baby girl at the front desk, I just gave her another picture. What's her name?
Miss Anita.
Miss Anita. That's my baby.
Miss
That's
Anita.
My baby, yes.
But have you ever
she
gone
anywhere? She smoked, too, so slip her a little something.
That's
when
my
you
baby. She got that. I give her a nip. Yeah. I give her a nip.
When's the last time you've been somewhere and haven't been recognized? Has that happened? See, it doesn't happen.
On some real talk, I'm being honest with you. I don't even remember the last time it's been like that. I done been to grocery stores, churches, underwater.
Underwater.
I didn't even look. This
the
crazy.
Like, Snoop, what up?
This is the crazy part. I done been and done some, you know, homeless work where you go down there and feed the homeless, and the homeless be like, Snoop Dogg, what's happening, dog? I'm like, man, how do you know me? You ain't got no TV. You ain't got no what you think. So I don't know. I can't figure it out.
The illest thing about your brand and your image is that you always you. You smoke your weed. Mm-hmm. You rep your gang. Mm-hmm. And it still transcends all races. Brands still won't be in business with you.
Yep. Right.
It's fun. Charlamagne, what I represent is fun. I had to come to realize that everything I do in life is based on fun. And when people get out with me, they know that they buying fun or that they being a part of fun. So.
Right.
That's what it's all about. I learned to live for the right reasons. Stop being so mad and having that negative energy. Even if people did me wrong, I learned to forgive and forget.
See, forgiveness. There we go again.
It's hard for me. I'm dealing with that one.
I can show you. It's a hard thing to do, but at the same time, it makes you feel better when you forgive and you move forward and your life is right and you're not worrying about what they doing. You doing what you doing.
Yeah, I was listening to Nori's Drinks Champs podcast.
Oh, that was a great one.
Yeah, salute to Nori. And I was surprised you said you and Suge Knight are like cool now.
Real cool.
Really?
Yeah, we had a long 3-4 hour conversation once upon a time where I met
that
with him.
That is some forgiveness.
And that's some forgiveness.
No, because he was trying to kill you at one point.
Yeah, he was. And the thing was, when I seen him, I was like kind of slipping. I was like, you know, doing what I wasn't supposed to be doing. And he slid up behind me. And instead of me reacting the wrong way, I just went into my regular mode. Like, you know what, I'm going to lay move up to the side with me. You can go upstairs and meet. And we went upstairs and chopped it up for like 3-4 hours and got caught up on some real love. Because it wasn't never that he hated me. I just think he was just disappointed that he couldn't control me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When you got a record label, when you got artists, and I've done this before, you really want control of that artist. But some artists deserve their own control and their own lane, and you got to give it to them.
He had to try to kill you, though.
I'm from the West Coast. It comes with the rules and regulations of the game. You know, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it.
No, it was it was serious. For everybody out there, like, Snoop had security guards. Like, to meet Snoop back in the day, I mean, this might have been, like, 15 years ago, it was a vetting process. Like,
as it should
be. You had to go through, it was scary.
Especially after Pac and Big just got killed.
It was scary. Yeah. To forgive him, if Snoop could forgive Suge, I think I might be able to forgive anybody.
Yeah, but you got to learn how to love yourself first. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And if you're a loving person, you can't go around hating people because then that's not love.
Right.
So it was like, how could I hate him, especially that he down now? You know, this would be the perfect time for me to kick him because he all the way down. But, mm-hmm. you know, this is the time for me to be there for him and be his friend, be love, because you never know when you're going to be down and out.
And you just have adjusted to this social media era so well. Like, it's a famous meme. But they got you with your headscarf on.
Oh, I look like somebody auntie. Hey, Charlamagne, I don't care, though. One thing about me.
You post it. You be posting it.
When people make fun of me, when they clown me, when they put me in a girl body with my head on it or with a rabbit suit on, I see it, I throw it up, and I like, who did this to me? And I go right in the joke. So I don't understand when people get offended when I do that to them, when I do it to myself. It's like, it's all fun and games
to
me.
As long as it's funny, it should be okay.
That's what it should be about. You know, when I got into the social media game, I didn't really understand it. Because I was like, I don't really want people in my business like that. But then I was like, damn, I'm the type of person that always go up to the fans. I always do this anyway, so I might as well just open up and, you know, let them be a part of my world every day.
You got some type of zen with you, man. Like, you had to have some therapy or something. It's just always you've been this way?
You know what? I think I always had it in me. It just had to come out of me.
Yeah.
I've been able to talk to some of the greatest people in the world, from Muhammad Ali to Louis Farrakhan to Tookie Williams to Quincy Jones. I've been able to talk to some of the greats, James Brown, where I've been able to have long, in-depth conversations with them, and they said certain things to me that helped me find who I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's certain things about legendary people and people and their legacies. Once you meet somebody that's a legend and they tell you a legend, mm-hmm. there's something about that you got to start patterning your game around them. Like, what I loved about Ali and some of these people that I named, that they were bigger outside of what they did than what they did.
Mm.
You know, I'm a great rapper, but you forgot about that right now because I'm doing so many other things. So that's what I want to be known for, all of the great things that I do outside of rapping.
That's what it feels like. It feels like rapping for you is just like a side hobby to just the Snoop brand.
It's a layup drill, you understand me, or a dunk contest when I need to get involved. You know, when I see somebody out there doing some new dunks and I'm like, okay, well, let me see if they're ready for this move right here.
Yeah.
Now, you and Martha Stewart are teaming up.
What you know about that, Ashley? You been reading the news?
Yes. I mean, I think that's crazy. A dinner party with Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, why is that crazy? They both been to jail. They both got arrested. Why is that crazy?
They got stuff to talk about.
I just can't imagine. It's just, I don't know.
But Martha is so, she's a beautiful person. Like, I see why all the homegirls in jail loved her, because she is such a beautiful spirit. She's down to earth. She's loving. And she understand the dynamics of having a good time. So me and her having, you know, this dinner party, you know, atmosphere is beautiful because you wouldn't expect what you would expect.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. Snoop Dogg is in the building. Now, we've seen a video of you and Game walking to the precinct in L.A. What was that all about? Explain that. And why did you guys have to, felt like you had to do it?
Well, the morning before it happened, Game, it hit me and he was like on 100. And he was hot, and I was hot. And we was just mad at all of the violence that was happening to these innocent people by the police. So, you know, I was ready to do whatever. So I was basically following his lead because I felt like it's a young man's game, and he's younger than me, and he's going to take the lead, and I'm going to follow this soldier. When he hit me back, I told him, I said, look, I don't want you to overreact. I want you to think about everything that you're going to do and put a real plan together. and hit me when you get your plan together and I'm with you. So then he went and made a call to Farrakhan for 3 hours and did all the things he had to do to prepare himself. Then he hit me back at about 3 a.m. was like, meet me here at 5 a.m. He didn't say nothing else. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on, so I got dressed to go to war.
Yeah, you look like you was ready to win.
He had on the chucks, the flannel.
Hold on, you didn't say nothing about this at all?
He just gave, when you get the back call, Charlamagne, you just show up.
He just showed
up. I wasn't going to be putting my shoes on, talking about, hold on, I'll be there. I was there. So when I get there, I'm fully loaded and ready to go, and I'm looking around, they passing out shirts and everybody on peace, and he got us all in a circle, and he said something that was so deep. He was like, you know what? I didn't even know what I was going to do when I came here. But now that I'm looking at the spirit of everything, this is what I want to do. And I want y'all to follow me on this. I want us to walk down to the precinct and reintroduce ourselves to the police department and let them reintroduce themselves to us so we can get some sort of dialogue going. And we listened to him. And we was like, man, that's kind of dope because we never talk to the police unless it's too late. Mm-hmm. Let's get that understanding right now. So while we walking down there, police escorting us there. Then when we get there, come to find out, the new recruits are graduating right now, about to go hit the streets in a matter of 24 hours, and we standing outside. Mm. And the chief of police is there, and the mayor is there. So they hear that we outside marching peacefully with the Nation of Islam with us. So they send the word that the chief would love to meet with me, Game, and two other of our people with the mayor behind closed doors. So we went up there, talked with him, chopped it up, got some understanding, wasn't arguing, wasn't talking bad, wasn't, you know, down planning. We was trying to get some understanding and some dialogue. Mm-hmm. They had a couple of meetings since then, and it's looking like it's going to be a great situation in L.A. with the police and the communities, because we sick and tired of talking after the fact when we could talk before the fact.
Right. But this been going on forever, especially in L.A. The first time that we ever saw real police violence was the Rodney King take.
But it's never been communication. And one thing about L.A., we have sheriffs and we have police department. The sheriff's department have minor incidents because they are sent to the county jail for 18 months as a part of their training before they hit the streets. Mm. The LAPD don't get no communication with the streets until they hit the streets. So there's a miscommunication off the jump. If you're scared, you never dealt with nobody from the hood, you don't know what he looked like, how he get out, you already got a different perception on him. But if you've been in the county jail, you've been around them, you know they lingo, they know you, it's a different perspective. When the sheriffs pull up, all the sheriffs want is dope and guns. If you ain't got no dope or no guns, they letting you go. They not going to shoot you. Well, they don't shoot you that much. Well, they not going to shoot you on GP.
Right.
The LAPD, they got a different agenda. So we was trying to get that understanding on, let's get some different protocols so they could be around these people in the community before they start policing this community.
Mm. Oh.
Did you learn how to de-escalate stuff, like, probably during, like, do you wish you had that same mentality during the whole East Coast, West Coast fiasco?
I think I did at the Source Awards. That was a perfect example of de-escalation because Suge Knight had it escalated to, I seen people reaching for pistols and I seen pistols in there. Was no police security. It was all hood security. It was New York versus Death Row Records at that point. And my conversation on that stage brought New York to a point to where they said, you know what? We're going to let y'all get out of here.
To us, that looked hostile.
Yeah.
It was very hostile because it was me saying that I know where I'm at, but at the same time, y'all know this is gangster rap that we do. We don't just talk it, we live it. So if you really, really in the mix, this is what takes place in the mix. And at that time, Puffy wasn't with it like that. He was making his music. Mm-hmm. He wasn't with the, you know, I ain't with the rah-rah. I'm with the music. Suge was with the rah-rah. And it's like, you know, it was a fine line because Puffy and them was my friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm riding with Death Row. And at the same time, I'm in New York. So it's like, if I don't say the right words, we all gonna get killed.
Mm.
Damn. So why come back and kick the buildings over?
Because something happened. Because something happened that I ain't going to speak on. Mm-hmm. That we took that on the chin and said we'll just get it back on this side. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you involved into the art of war, certain losses you take, certain, you know, sacrifices you make, it come with the territory. And we knew where it came from. We knew who sent the shot. Mm-hmm. And we never had a problem with him. We allowed that to happen because we knew in the art of war, that's what happens. When you getting busy, you gotta take what you get. You know what I'm saying? So it's like we lived through it, we survived it, we forgave and we forgot, and we moved forward. The parties that was involved, we met behind closed doors and we got to understand, yeah, because I know you sent that at me. That was a good shot. You missed, though. I forgive you. We're going to move forward. I ain't going to send nothing at you when you're on my side.
Mm-hmm.
We gravy, we good.
Can you tell the story about Nas, man? That was the first time you met Nas, you said?
Yeah, the first time I met Nasty Nas, I was in Gardena on 100 and I think it was 36, 35th, one of those streets.
And that's a Crip neighborhood.
Yeah, shotguns. And I was out there hanging tough with my homeboys, and a white van pulls up, and it got like about 15, 16 people in it. And all of a sudden, the door opened. Boom. Some dude jump out, and sweatpants is lifted up to his knee with some boots on.
Tim. And he got on red sweatshirt.
He got on all red, running right towards me. So the homies is like, they finna draw down on him. I'm like, hold on, cuz, that's the rapper from New York. That's Nasty Nas, cuz. So he come over to me, and he shake my hand. I'm like, cuz, it's a pleasure to meet you, but let me let you know. When you ever in L.A., don't ever jump out with no red or no blue on, because you don't know what neighborhood you in, loved one. Take my number down, so I'll holler at you next time you come to the city.
Crazy, because I tell you the time Nas pulled out a gun on me. I ran up on Nas like that.
What?
I ran up on Nas. I had a mixtapes in the bag. I ran up on him just like that. Yo, Nas, I got something for you. And I was going in my bag to pull it out.
Not a good
By
idea.
By the time I came out, he had a gun on me. What you got for me? I say, it's a CD, my CD.
I got something for you.
I got something.
What you got? What you got for me?
Yeah, yeah, you used to roll like that at one point. Snoop used to have a briefcase.
Yeah, all that old stuff, that man. Hey, Charlamagne, I'm peace now. What I understood about about moving with the peace, when I had the gun, have gun problems, we'll travel. You know what I'm saying? They say have gun, we'll travel. Have gun, problems, we'll travel. When I removed the gun from my game, I had less issues because I was able to finesse and able to be more strategic with my conversation. When I had the gun with me, I was, you know, reckless.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Snoop Dogg's in the building now. Charlamagne?
Now, you said you first smoked weed with your son, right?
My oldest son.
Your oldest son.
Yeah.
We did that question here on the Breakfast Club, I think. Would you smoke weed with your child to keep him from doing it in the street?
Yeah, because like I say, you know, what I'm going to give him is the righteous way. I don't know what y'all going to put in there. You may lace it. You know, it may be, I don't know, because it happened to me before. I've been laced with some things, so I don't trust the game. So I would rather get him, you know, schooled for me personally on the understanding on what is and what not and what to do and what not to do.
I think they did that to you on purpose because they know you Snoop. And everybody want to outsmoke Snoop. So let me lace this blunt real quick just to say I outsmoke Snoop.
I don't
Snoop.
Even take blunts from people no more. You know, I used to be in the crowd. I used to be reckless, man. I'd be in the crowd and they hand me a blunt. I'd be like, oh, and then I start looking at these people like,
ugh.
I'm cool.
I'm going to tell you how you influenced me recently. We were having a cookout and I was going to make some turkey franks.
Oh, ugh.
And then my friend was like, you got to see Snoop finding out what is in these hot dogs, and you're not going to eat that again. You know we threw the pack of Franks out.
Give me some.
Tell us what's in the hot dogs anymore. And turkey Franks.
No,
now.
It ain't. That's the same. Ugh.
For real?
It's
really?
The same machine, man. It's nasty, man. Did you see that?
Mm-mm. You have to see it. It'll make you never eat it again. I'm telling you.
It's really? Horrible, man. I can't get out. I used to come to New York. My hotel got a hot dog man that's right on the corner. Me and Cub been cool for 20 years. I don't even look at him no more. I just walk right past him. Like, he like, Snoop, my hot dogs are waiting for you. No, I'm good, cuz. I seen what y'all doing. I'm cool on you.
DMX was here a few weeks ago. He ate four of them.
I saw about that.
No, he didn't. Threw up immediately.
He ate four of them right on the corner.
He was drunk, he ate four and threw up immediately.
But they gave him a whole bottle. He drank a whole bottle of Henny, and then he was hungry. Then he had four hot dogs, threw up all over the street.
That's my dog, right? He the only person that ever got me to drink Hennessy at an award show.
Wow.
And I mean at an award show that's on TV, like we was at the Grammys or something. And he was sitting like two seats down, and he had a Hennessy bottle. He was just, big dog, you want some? And I couldn't even say no. I was like, yeah, get here, cuz. I'm like, whoa. And we sitting up in there getting drunk in the Grammys in front of all these white folks with real Hennessy, no cup, straight out the bottle.
Mm-mm.
Shout out to DMX for keeping it hood.
Snoop, you ain't never cared about your image in front of white folks. Stop it. I saw you on Jimmy Kimmel. You said gangster rap is back.
I don't think it ever left because you got to look at everybody that's winning right now. All they doing is rapping gangster. You know, it's always going to be some different styles of rap. That's what I say, that we don't understand. But they didn't understand me when I came out. You know, when I was a young man, 18, 19 years old, they had a different perspective on me where politicians was running over my CDs and they was doing things.
See Dolores Tucker.
Oh, come on, man. They was coming at me and Tupac like we was the craziest men in the world and Ice-T. So now to see me and Ice-T in a position now where white America politicians respect us and love us and, you know, appreciate us, it's a crazy game. But you got to understand that hip-hop will revolve and it never will change. It's going to do what it's supposed to do. It's going to grow. It came from New York. It's going to come back home. The South really got a chokehold on the game right now.
We just were talking about that, too. The South going on a damn near
might be the longest run ever out of 90s West Coast and 90s.
They got a chokehold on the game because you got to remember they were the ones who were disrespected the most. Mm-hmm. They were the ones who was always, you know, kicked to the curb and overlooked. Ultra disrespect. You know, they music, they country bunkers, they this, they that. Really, the West was the only ones who really appreciated them because we all came from there. Actually, everybody came from the South. Mm-hmm. But we felt more connected to them because more of our South roots were still in the South. So we could identify with the Southern rappers. And now I'm looking at them rocking and controlling the game for so long. It don't look like they're going to give it up because now they got everybody rapping like them.
Yep.
And when you do that, when you get your style and your DNA, when everybody start rapping like the South. Nobody ever thought that would happen.
Right. That's what's happening right now. Designer, OT Genesis, like all them songs sound like it could be South records.
All of them.
Yeah.
Is this Death Row biopic happening after Straight Outta Compton? I know they've been talking about it, and are you on board with doing that?
I don't know about the Death Row biopic, but I seen Tupac, All Eyes on Me, and that bomb.
It's good?
Do they have somebody in the movie that actually looks like you? Because the guy in Straight Outta Compton did not look like you at all.
Could he act like me?
Not really. But you 101, though.
I'm watching the movie like you.
Yeah.
I'm eating popcorn on my part too. Nah, but the Tupac movie looked good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well put together. It's emotional. It felt good watching the screening. Right. It felt very good.
The Death Row one, would you be on deck with that? Would you think that would be a...
The only way I would do a Death Row movie is if me and Suge Knight told the story through our eyes.
Mm. No Dre?
Wouldn't need Dre eyes. Dre did it Straight Outta Compton.
Mm.
It's just because I feel like Snoop and Suge was the tension and the excitement of Death Row. You know what I'm saying? If you told it through our eyes, then you would get what people want to see when it comes to Death Row. Dre's eyes on Death Row wasn't really what you really want to see. That's why he left. We was the ones who was making it move and keeping it popping. Dre was basically trying to find a way out, and then he found a way out and he left. We was dealing with the politics of gangbanging, the politics of infrastructure being wrong. Some of my homies didn't like his homies. Some of my homies shot at his homies. He shot at some of my homies. It was like, it was a lot of, and then we had to become cool, and then we became uncool. Then he paid some of my homies to be down with him, and it was just, that to me is the better story.
Mm.
Because now we cool now. So we could sit in a room and we could tell the truth on what it was and how we got to where we are now.
You executive producing Bow Wow's last album?
Yeah.
Put it out there?
Yeah. That's my little homeboy. I'm going to try to get him all the way right because I feel like he still got something to say.
What are you going
to
talk about at this point, though?
We got to figure that part out.
Or it can't be no gangster stuff.
Nah, you're not going to believe that. That's what you're not going to. That's why I think I need to be there to help shape and mold it and make sure it's very believable because it's unbelievable if it's gangster.
But we appreciate you joining us, Snoop. I love when Snoop comes up here.
I know. We could talk to Snoop all day.
I'll be watching y'all, too. Y'all know that, right? I be tuned in. Like, I don't get to listen to y'all.
Thanks for putting us
California.
On the album, by the way. You
y'all
know.
Like that, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
excited.
I didn't pay y'all either. Y'all like that, huh?
He sure did.
Look what the label was saying. The label was like, we're going to have to get this clear. I said, man, we ain't going to have to pay them nothing. Yeah. When they hear this, that's what they going to get paid off hearing this.
We were hype.
They sent the
lie.
Email. We was like, he got to ask? Like, hell yeah, put
but
it
the
on
But the labels
there.
Be so, they be so concerned with, you know, making sure that, I'm like, man, this is my family right here, man. I wouldn't have put them on there if they wasn't family, man. This is what we do.
What we gonna do, sue Snoop?
Nope.
We be the biggest Snoop in the world.
It has happened, though.
Nah.
Charlamagne.
It has happened.
Nah.
Charlamagne, I done a conversation with somebody where a dude called me telling me how much he loved me and whoop-de-whoop-whoop-whoop, and I put it on the album. 3 weeks later, he sued me.
No, man.
25 racks.
Now, let's rethink this Breakfast Club now. Let's rethink this.
25 racks. Hold on, he didn't say all that.
I get y'all some free tickets when I perform out here.
But I saw you getting sued for Ain't No Fun.
For real?
Yeah, I just saw that on TMZ.
What happened?
Some artists are saying that they had that song and they was going to put it out, the hook, and then you guys took it. And
Ain't No Fun is...
Nate Dogg
is 30 years old.
And Nate Dogg is rest in peace, so now they're going to disrespect my homeboy. Now, I might have to go gangster on this one right here.
Boy.
So don't do this. I'm not even going to pay no attention to the edge. I think you're trying to get me riled up. You want me to leave out here with an attitude.
I did see that somewhere.
Yeah,
though.
I did see it. Just
for real?
Recently.
Somebody lying. Because actually, Warren G and Daz came up with that song when we was living in Culver City, and it was a whole nother beat because we had W Balls was our radio station that we was working
W
before
Balls.
We had a deal. Yeah, we had a radio station where we would give out the number and people would call in and we would, you know, do our thing from our house.
Oh, that was real?
For real.
Oh, I thought that was
No, I mean, I heard that on the album.
For real, Dr. Dre took that idea and made it what it sounded like on the album.
Isn't it crazy how all the stuff that y'all did back then, whether it was Bye Felicia and Friday or These Nuts, has came all the way back around?
It never really went.
And these people think they made it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This dude, Wealth and the Great, gonna try to get me with These Nuts with his raggedy mouth. And I reversed the charges on him and hit him with the game, and he was like, I'm like, yeah, homie, you're not going to get me. I created this.
When he was a little,
I'm like, he was a puppy, though. He was a little puppy when that was going on. You know what I'm saying? So he didn't know no better.
Right. Goodness gracious. Well, Snoop, we appreciate you joining us.
Man, thank y'all for having me, man. It's one of my favorite shows to do just because y'all always keep it 100. Y'all keep it real. Y'all solid with me. I've done interviews with y'all individually and together, and I love what y'all stand for. Continued success. I'm glad to see y'all on a real TV network, too.
Thank you, my brother.
It's the Breakfast Club of Snoop Dogg.